We'll go ahead and call to order this August 22nd, 2019 meeting of the NARS Commission. I'm Jonathan Price, the chair of the commission and also a representative from the Big Island and UH Hilo. And we'll go ahead and start with introductions of the commission and staff and others present.
Hello, I'm Scott Rowland. I'm a geologist at UH Manoa, and I'm the hiking community representative on the commission.
I'm Janice Matsunaga. I represent the chairperson for the Department of Agriculture.
I'm Michelle Clark. I represent Kauai.
Hi, I'm Jeff Saito. Represents the UT.
I'm
Maui.
I'm Mary Lou Kobayashi. I'm representing the Office of Planning. Mary Alice Evans is the director. Here representing the office.
Yeah. Patrick Hart, UH Hilo Biology.
Who am I representing?
Big Island.
Allison Cohen, Natural Resource Management Representative.
Aloha, I'm Emma Ewan with the Native Ecosystem Program.
Glenn Bauer representing geology. Kind of long, I guess.
Okay. Bob Mazzilla, excuse me, DLNR. I'll be right back.
Okay. Other staff present?
Leia Laramie, Division of Forestry and Wildlife.
Or Duval, Division of Forestry and Wildlife, Nepom, Maui Nui.
Peter Landon, Division of Forestry and Wildlife on Maui Nepom.
Nick Agarasis, Sunshine District of Hawaii, Natural Program Manager.
Would you mind closing that door, Nick?
Excuse me?
Would you mind closing that door?
Not at all.
Thank you.
Okay, welcome everybody. We'll go ahead and proceed to item 2, which is approval of the minutes of the October 16th, 2018 NARS Commission meeting. Hopefully everyone received the minutes and had a chance to have a look at them. Are there any adjustments?
My only comment is that I was absent, so you can put me on the absent list.
Ah, okay.
That's right.
Okay, so that's one change we'll have to...
I don't know if... We should put where it was held. It wasn't held here. It was held at that other state building, and I think the location should be put on the, maybe at the top
of
the minutes.
Okay, so that's two minor changes. Were there any other changes, additions, corrections? Okay. Barring that, do we have a motion to approve the minutes?
I move there. Accepted.
Okay, we have a motion.
Second.
Seconded. We have a motion and it's been seconded. Do we have any further discussion of this item?
I would abstain because I wasn't at the meeting, so I can't speak on that.
Okay, we'll count the abstention. That said, all in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And abstentions, one abstention. Proceeding to item number 3, we have some Natural Area Partnership Program renewals.
I will just give a little background. Every 6 years, these Natural Area Partnership Program locations undergrown NARS Commission review and also the Board of Land and Natural Resources review. So this is our chance to make any tweaks to the existing project that we're going to review, and then it'll go to the board in order to set up another 6-year contract. But go for it.
Okay. So I'm going to take off my commissioner hat and put on my Nature Conservancy hat. I'm Allison Cohen. I'm the director of the Maui Forest Program. You guys were, I guess the plan was linked online. I just want to caveat that and say that the plan is still in draft form. So happy to receive any comments and edits, but please know that grammatical and typos and endangered species status, all that stuff is still being updated. I mean, it should be fairly fairly accurate. I'm going to start timing myself. Okay, so let's see. Is there a little... Should I just use this?
Yeah.
Okay. So the area that we're talking about, and feel free to thumb through the two plans. There's one in the center of the table, and Pat has one. We're talking about the East Maui Irrigation Addition to Waikamoi Preserve, and I'll show you a map. I might, from here on out, try and call it Waikamoi Makai, because I don't really like that East Maui Irrigation Addition term. It's what's officially in what the NAP Preserve is called, though, so that language will probably remain in the plan. So the area we're talking about is just Makai of Waikamoi Preserve. The original Waikamoi Preserve is a conservation easement owned by Haleakala Ranch. We've had that since 1983. And that's about 5,200 acres. The EMI addition, Waikamoi Makai, is about 3,700 acres, and it is just below and adjacent to Waikamoi. So that area together makes it one of, if not the largest private nature preserves in the state at almost 9,000 acres. We do manage it together as one parcel. So this area is at the core of the East Maui Watershed Partnership area, which is about 100,000 acres on East Maui. Again, Haleakala Ranch lands in green, East Maui irrigation lands in blue. It's worth noting, of course, that on Maui, Alexander and Baldwin lands, over 50,000 acres were purchased by Mahi Pono, and that includes 15,000 acres of watershed lands. However, Mahi Pono purchased about 50% ownership in East Maui Irrigation, and I kind of quote that because I'm still waiting for official word from the Mahi Pono representative whether all of this TMK is Mahi Pono or whether it's literally 50-50. Regardless, it actually does not matter for the purposes of our conservation easement. It's a perpetual conservation easement that moves with the landowner, so we have all the same rights as we've had before. And the representative that was East Maui Irrigation on the Watershed Partnership is now the Mahi Pono representative. So we have no indication that Mahi Pono would not be a part, you know, and a supporter of the Watershed Partnership. So we're just above Ko'olau Forest Reserve and Catty Corner to Hanavi Natural Area Reserve, and then the boundary of Waikamoi itself is abutting Haleakala National Park. So just another view from above. The area is really remote. Some of it's very remote, very rugged terrain. The East Maui, the Waikamoi Makai parcels from about 3,700 feet to about 7,800 feet. So here's a look at some of the natural communities in the area. It is less diverse than the original Waikamoi Preserve in that it is much more wet. So it's ohia, wet, montane forest. Out to the west, you have a little koa ohia forest. You also have some pukiawe subalpine dry shrub land, as well as ohia subalpine mesic dry forest, and some wet cliffs. So Ko'olau Gap runs through the middle, some very, very steep Aluhe wet cliff in there. And you can see a lot of water. So just some looks at the area. This is more towards the western end, looking up towards Haleakala, almost towards that Koa Ohia wet, close to mesic forest. And then some of the more wet areas here, lots of waterfalls, lots of streams. Over 10 headwaters for some of our primary streams originate in Waikamoi Preserve and traverse this landscape. It averages over 200 inches of rain per year, so it's quite wet. And then on the right side, you're seeing what we call a dinosaur back, so that represents one of the natural barriers. So the full 9,000 acres is pretty much fenced, except for really just one natural barrier at this point. And we're always looking to see if that is indeed a barrier. So there's another look at the water infrastructure. So this water area is key to Maui's livelihood. It serves the Ko'olau and Hana aquifers, which supply Maui's 60% of Maui's groundwater resources. And you can see that the water infrastructure lines, those kind of turquoise lines, the water is collected at a variety of locations and feeds the Waikamoi and Kahakapau reservoirs. And this water serves about 10,000 services in upcountry Maui. So very, very critical that these headwaters in this watershed is kept healthy. Just showing another graphic to depict the amount of groundwater recharge. So even in times of drought, this area is paramount as in terms of the aquifer holding the water. This is Ellen Mayer's work and showing that dark blue area where you have the most groundwater recharge. So it's beautiful habitat. It's wonderful forest. It's near pristine. I don't like that word, and of course it's not pristine. I don't know what is anymore. The western area does have some weed problems, quite significant ginger, and I'll show you a map of that. But the core and the eastern area is great habitat for birds, for invertebrates, rare plants. The area is designated critical habitat for 9 different species. It has 20 endangered plant species and 9 endangered animal species. And some of those critically endangered species are here. Of course, 2 of the rarest birds in the world. These are 2. This is the kiwi-kiwi, the Maui kiwi-kiwi. Hey. Maui parrotbill or the kiwi-kiwi. These are the new estimates that Pat, Dr. Hart, was a part of, the report that just came out from the 2017 survey. So unfortunately, vastly decreased population estimates for some of these birds. So 157 individuals for the Maui parrotbill and just over 1,700 for the Akohe Kohe, or the crested honey creeper.
Is that just in the preserve, or?
That's it in total, right. So they're only found on East Maui now, endemic to East Maui, though they were found on Molokai or West Maui as well. But very, very restricted habitat. Those ranges have also shrank. Oh, I'll show you that later. I'm going to talk a little bit more about the birds later. So for rare plants, just to show you a couple photos of the rare and endangered plants. This is an Akea, which Stromia villosa, that actually we see a lot. There's a lot of them in this Waikamoi Makai parcel. It's actually really quite hard to differentiate, though. I have to have a botanist with me. And the Nohoanu, beautiful geranium. And Cyania, Kunthiana. A lot of Cyania are found in this parcel. As well as our invertebrates, let's not forget the pinau. This is the, I forget the common name for this damselfly, flying winged, I'm not sure. But this very special damselfly that's only found in East Maui, and the happy face spider is not endangered, but you know, who can resist? So I'll go into the programs, what we do for management in this area, what the NAP program helps support. It's worth noting that, like I said, we do manage Waikamoi, the 9,000 acres as a whole, and we have other funding sources coming into this. So the amount that the NAP program gives is wonderful, and we really appreciate it, and we're able to leverage that for a lot more. So we provide more like $3 to probably every dollar that the NAP for this program puts in to Waikamoi. So we can just jump right in. You all can imagine the largest problem, the biggest problem that we've had to deal with is ungulates, pigs, primarily just pigs in this area, though deer knocking at the door. When we first acquired the parcel, let's see, that was 2013, we started mapping the hotspots and trying to get a handle on how many pigs were in the area. So this, you know, this was damaged. There's a lot of areas that were damaged. And of course, the first thing you do is you put up a fence. So we got some funding, I think primarily federal and county. This is a 3-mile fence on the western boundary. So this fence did not exist. This was just a full-on open door to the East Maui watershed for pigs and what have you. And there was a lot of damage. And so this has been critical to the integrity of the watershed. It's about 3 miles. We put that up in less than a year, contracted it out to FAIR. They did a great job. Marked the rare plant locations. We did just a regular hog wire fence with apron.
no plans to retrofit at this point in time. And some really steep areas. This is actually an extension that we built, East Maui Watershed Partnership built for us down into the eastern side of Honolulu. And this was, again, we didn't have this. We thought it was a natural barrier, but started to think that maybe some pigs could just, you know, slowly work their way up. They've got nothing better to do. And there's the other side, so building fence on ropes. So this TNC staff built this on ropes. It's the east side of Honolulu. West side, sorry. Some pretty challenging stream crossings to deal with. You know, in this time of climate change, we have drought, we have flash flooding, we have crazy windstorms and hurricanes, and all of this is very challenging to maintaining our fences. These rubber stall mats have worked really well for us. They, when enough rain comes down, they'll lift up and allow the rain and debris to go underneath rather than just piling up in the hog wire and causing the fence to burst. But of course, after storms, we do have to go check those fences regularly. So that requires a lot of manpower. So the fence is up, what do? We remove the animals. We start with hunting. So we did have, the area was open to East Maui irrigation, workers, staff, families, et cetera. So essentially there was a community hunt program before and while we put the fence up for a full year. Once we put the fence up, we got to it using a one hunter, one dog kind of sweep pattern where each dog has a GPS collar, each hunter has a GPS and collar. And so they can see at all times where the dogs are, and they walk in the line and essentially push the animals. And the dogs kind of will converge on an animal, the hunter sees on his GPS, they've converged, they can go and humanely dispatch the animal. So the dog program is super duper. I had to put this in because we bought this really fancy, awesome hunting dog with a great resume from Australia. And this is now one of our main hunting dogs, Ozzy, and he's like, he's huge. He's like, I don't know, 150 pounds, massive. Killer. You can tell that's a killer. So this is what it looked like. We had some bets as to the numbers of animals removed. It ended up being 29, which is a little bit less than I guessed. So the fence was up February, March 2015. February 2016, the third bar down, that was actually the last two pigs. So in 1 year, we got rid of the pigs. But then there was a storm and there was ingress and we caught three more. So the last pigs were caught in September 2016 and we haven't seen sign or evidence or anything, no breaches since that time. Now that wasn't all through hunting. We did have traps as well, so we had to get out there on the ground, see what was working, and in the more remote areas where it was too dangerous to take the dogs, too expensive, helicopter, $1,100 an hour, we did have some remote traps out there doing the work for us. So this is what it ended up looking like. That's a little bit over a year of tracks, I believe. Obviously, the little pigs are where they were captured, and we have a lot of work done in this western end because it's our access point. We are also doing ginger control. So anytime we're out there, we're scouting, looking on the ground for animal signs. We also installed some transects, so we walk those a couple of times a year and look for presence or absence of pig sign. So you can see in 2014, the red is essentially there were pigs, the green means there were no pigs. So by actually February 2016, we weren't seeing any sign at all. And we still monitor those. Now a visual way of documenting if there are still pigs is photo points. So this is February 2014. The fence had just been put up, and you can see there's some pig damage there, pretty nice little muddy wallow. The same location just 2 months ago, have some pretty significant recovery. Granted, it's not 100% native, but it's pretty exciting to see the recovery and all of that aluhe. And we're really excited to see how this succession occurs over time, what that looks like. So we do these every year. Just a snapshot of the ungulate management for the whole area. So we have transects throughout. We do hunting in areas that are accessible where people could access, hunters, hikers, dogs that could get lost from adjacent areas. We don't want them getting trapped. So we will hunt those areas only And then we have areas that we do have those remote traps, those snares working for us. And just to emphasize, again, it's not one and done. You don't put up a fence and leave it. You have to get out there and check it. We have a really regimented schedule for checking our fences. We're really aware of the weather and storms and getting out there and checking them right away, because one big tree fall like this could mean hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars of work down the tube, because these pigs are smart. They get in there and breed and you don't know about it. That's trouble. So moving on. Now that it is zero tolerance ungulates, of course, we're maintaining that fence check schedule in our scouting, but we're doing weed control. This bad boy is Himalayan ginger. You're probably familiar with it. Some folks call it kahili ginger. I ask you not to do that because it's a Hawaiian name. It's a pretty name, and this is an ugly plant, and it's from the Himalayas. So let's call it what it is. Pat Biley would call it toilet brush ginger. So a little shout out to Pat. But what these, so there is ginger coming in from one area, but we have a handle on that. We're kind of holding the line of that ginger. Scarier, though, is the outlier populations that pop up from non-native birds like the wide-eye eating hundreds of little seeds and then pooping them out throughout the watershed, and we have to find that. And, of course, from the air through canopy, it can be very difficult until they're big and flowering like this. So we get out there and look for these outlier populations and take care of them as much as we can. So here's ginger growing epiphytically up super high in a tree. There's a staff member climbing a tree and killing it. And then over here, those brown patches are, that's dead ginger. It's kind of hard to tell. That's actually on a cliff. So some of these areas are too dangerous for our staff to get to. So we'll have to repel. That's dangerous too. That's also, tricky. In this situation, what we do is kill it with a paintball gun. You guys have probably heard about herbicide ballistic technology. That's Dr. James Leary. He's actually shooting a strawberry guava there, but it's herbicide in the little paintballs. Shoot it from a helicopter. All is well and good in the world, in theory, but Dr. Leary left, so we're working on keeping that capacity going. It's really important that we have that to get those outlier gingers and other plants to strawberry guava, what have you, Australian tree fern. It's a really important tool. So it's tricky. There's the ginger, the little yellow dots are ginger. So we have the biggest population trying to come in from the west. We also have a big population of ginger coming up from Ko'olau Gap, and we're working below this parcel, below Waikamoimakai Ko'olau Forest Reserve. We're working with East Maui Watershed Partnership, and so that line means nothing. We work together with the partnership. We camp together. We tackle the ginger together. So that's, I think we're getting a lot better about that in the conservation community, to not just like look at your GPS and say, oh, that's not our land. I'm like, we're not going to deal with that. That's not how we do business. Some other species, Tibicina, strawberry guava, Pydemia, all priority species that for the most part is like early detection, rapid response, except for there's Tibicina down below. That's a tough one. We need biocontrol. So besides the regular ungulate and weed work, that's the core of it. We have to continue that work. We do try and innovate to keep it sexy, to keep it most effective, using the smallest amount of resources for the best bang. So we've started employing the use of drones or small unmanned aerial systems. Here we have Caleb and Keikoa. They're at the top of Pu'ukoʻolau, and they're flying the drone to go monitor mortality of pines that we've killed in Waikamoi Preserve. So we'll fly transects over areas where we've killed pines. We actually kill them both on the ground and aerially. So we have pines growing on cliffs, and they can go monitor those with the drone, which does a much better job, of course, than monitoring from the ground, and is way less expensive than a helicopter. Here's just a quick look what that might look like, an image of a Mexican weeping pine there with the star in 2017, and there it is dead in 2018. This is kind of fun. We've been using we have a really fancy UAV that we got with from a private foundation. It has two cameras, as a natural color, and it has a forward-looking infrared camera. So at the same time, we can see what's happening and look for that heat signature put off by animals. I'll show you a video in a second. We've been using that to help partners and adjacent landscapes or other landscapes find or map their areas, find and remove animals. So there's my crew, Carrie. She's hunting there in Calpo for the Leeward-Haleakala Watershed Partnership. Let's see if this works. Where's play? Mm-hmm. Oh, good. So here we are adjacent to Waikamoi in the, we call it the DMU. Look, here's some deer. It's so open. You still can't see them. You'll see them soon. You'll see some movement. They're there. They're there. Do you see it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's pretty open, and it's pretty darn close, and you still can barely see the deer. So the FLIR is really, really helpful in this situation. Just an example. So we've been helping. This is adjacent to Waikamoi Haleakala Ranch lands. We run our dogs in there to keep them attuned and on animals, able to catch animals since we don't have any in our own preserves. Go on. Okay, so this is, let me preface. This is at Mo'umomi on Molokai, has a deer problem. This is only the FLIR imagery because it's not even quite light yet. So Caleb, operating the drone, is helping to guide the hunter to the deer. This is kind of, it's snipped together, so hopefully it's still worthwhile. Now I think that's the deer in there. We'll see. It'll be obvious in a second. It's gotta be. That's Brian and Ole, Hawaiian Brian. Okay, you'll start to see that's deer. In there, you see? There's two of them. Okay, Brian's getting his gun ready. Oh, got him. So, that's a pretty fun use of the drone. And we hope to do more of this, helping the state and other natural area reserves and forest preserves to help find the animals and get rid of the last ones. It's a really important tool that we want to help build capacity in our partners. Now, it's not all, weeds and ungulates and drones. It's really important to continue to do the resource monitoring, the threat monitoring, to work with partners to see what's happening with our invertebrates and our rare plants. So we support the Plant Extinction Prevention Program, the Hawaii Invertebrate Program. Get those guys out in the forest to see what's going on with our snails and our rare plants. Biocontrol, and then we do quite a bit of community outreach. We don't have a community outreach position, but we do have a volunteer docent program. We do hikes in the preserve once a month, quarterly volunteer trips. We employ the use of interns and really try and build capacity in our local youth. And then Waikamoi is a site for youth education and naturalist programs for our partners. So Maui Invasive Species Committee and the Haleakala National Park will come in and lead hikes. I should say though that we've been pretty careful and we are restricting access to Waikamoi. We still are doing all those programs I talked about, but we are really careful and aware of rapid ohia death and have very strict biosanitation protocols. One particular project I want to emphasize is forest birds, the kiwiqiu. You all know about the translocation creating a second population of kiwiqiu in Nakula Natural Area Reserve. And those birds are coming from Honavi, and that will be happening in a couple months. Cross your fingers, knock on wood. We'll see how that goes, really hoping for the best. And at the same time, we're going to be monitoring, hopefully. I encourage research to be done on the kiwiqiu, hoping that the forest birders and other forest bird groups throughout the state maybe can hui to do some research and population monitoring on the kiwiqiu in Waikamoi at the same time, so that we can consider Waikamoi as a possible site for the second cohort of kiwiqiu, if and when that time comes. So this is the newly restricted ranges of the three birds. So that includes EEVE, the big green blob. EEVE are actually doing quite well. They're slightly increasing on the windward side of Maui. KiwiQ as a whole are doing very poorly. They're considered to be stable on the windward side, but again, as a whole, does that really matter? And then a kohe-kohe not doing well. So as far as their range, it does cover a pretty significant swath of Waikamoi and Waikamoi Makai. So we'll continue to support that work. Just really quickly, one kind of cool thing we're doing is the area we work in doesn't have cell coverage. It can be quite dangerous. And of course, it doesn't have like wireless. But more importantly is we can't see across the watershed. So we installed this kind of big, sexy camera. It pans 360 degrees. It zooms in and out. So we can look for fire across the watershed, including like over into the park. And we have a conifer plantation that's like just tons of fuel. So we can monitor that from the office. I have like a little joystick. I can zoom in and out from my desk. I'd rather be up there. But it's a top pu'ukolau, and we have an IP address that we give to partners that they can check it out. It has been down, so I'll give you the IP address. It'll be back up soon. But this is what it looks like when it's not working. So a large swath with just no coverage, not even be able to hit the repeater in some of these areas. So in theory, when the Wi-Fi system is working, it can project out Wi-Fi out to 5 miles. We haven't yet seen that working, so I'm not sure what the hang-up is there. One final pretty cool project. This was just published. This is about a return on investment of our conservation work in Waikamoi, focused on Waikamoi, just because we have 30 years of conservation data. This was done by University of Hawaii Economic Research Organization, Leah Bremer and folks. Some pretty exciting results. Of course, we all know, right, that watershed is important for water and water is our livelihood. But how many different times can you say that to legislators or funders? They want to see the money. They want to see the numbers behind it. So this shows, without the current management taking place, what Waikamoi would look like in the future. So red is introduced wet mesic forest. So you see 2045 is starting to come in along the southern border and along the western border. By 2072, it's all invaded. The shrubland is not as invadable, or maybe the modeling just didn't capture that. There's the numbers that are kind of exciting. So the conservation that's done at Waikamoi protects up to 38.6 billion gallons of groundwater recharge over the next 100 years. That's $137 million in savings to the water utility in terms of avoided treatment. And by 2072, we're preventing 4,300 tons of sediment from entering the ocean. That one's like shocking to me. Last but not least, of course, rapid ohia death. We serve on the Maui Nui Rapid Ohia Death Working Group, and we're able to just get that position funded as a coordinator. So we oversee a contract to have that work ongoing and on top of things like right of entries. So Maui did just see its first incident of huli ohia. That's the tree there in East Maui. Shout out to the team, best team that there ever was. And I think I did it. I know we have such a packed agenda. I'm happy to entertain questions if there's time, and then I think I have to step out and be a commissioner. So, thanks for your attention. No questions?
Should I leave? Or do I not leave?
Maui protocol, you were thinking of translocating birds to Waikamoi or translocating those birds from Waikamoi to the other site?
Right, sorry, yes, from Waikamoi to Nakula. So it would be the site for the second capture, the second cohort. What's really important about that is that the Hanavi
birds that where they're capturing the first cohort are genetically different from the Waikamoi birds, and pretty much all of the birds that are going over there this first time are just going to have that eastern genetics. So they do need that for that, you know, that diverse variability.
And is there a timeline for that, or are we just waiting to see how it goes? And
yeah, I think so. Not that I know of.
I had a couple questions. Excuse me. I admit I was reading fast, but it took me a long time to figure out that you were just talking about that one little parcel.
Right.
So if you could somehow say that a little clearer right at the beginning.
In the plan.
In the plan.
Okay.
I got it. You did a much better job today.
Right.
It took me a while when I was reading.
Okay.
And the second question is a little more general. When you have one of these big watershed partnerships that has private land in there that needs to be renewed every 6 years, is it easier to renew those little bits separately on a different schedule, because obviously they were added at different times, or would it be better to think about somehow putting them all in sync so that you would renew them all one time, or would that be too much of a problem?
Right. I think for this one, the six-year cycle kind of makes it difficult. We talked about, Emma and I talked about at least putting the two Waikamoi Knapp preserves together for one renewal, because I think we were just here 2 years ago for the Waikamoi parcel, which is adjacent. But I think the schedule kind of makes it tough, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. We could do that. We could say, okay, let's get it all on one schedule. So it's a thought. It might be more work for us, but maybe over the long term it's not that bad.
I mean, it doesn't really impact our decision today, but mm-hmm. is that something that we... Maybe it would be a bad idea. Maybe it would just be too much to deal with at any one mm-hmm. at one time. Mm-hmm. But perhaps we could
if you hit it on the wrong year where the right. where the budget wasn't looking good, it could be a little scary.
Yeah.
Or if all the Maui ones and the Big Island ones yeah. all ended up the same time.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I mean, especially because you're trying to work towards everybody treating these boundaries as just lines on maps, right? You said mm-hmm. you don't just stop at a boundary. Would it make these renewals, I don't know, easier or harder if they
right.
were all one time?
Right.
We do have to keep moving on this because we have a really packed agenda. So is there anything else that we want to go over?
I just want to figure 7. I wasn't sure how to read that. Maybe you could explain it better in your write-up.
Oh, no. Is it a UHERO figure?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Where's the economist in the room?
So I wasn't sure how to interpret that.
Let's see. You know, I should probably talk to you offline about it, get a little bit more background information. I mean, the blue is the avoided loss of freshwater yield versus
right.
the avoided loss of groundwater recharge. And that's with current conservation activities continuing.
Okay. Yeah, the explanation wasn't too clear to me. And
okay.
Anyway, so
I can
as rather
bolster
than,
it.
You know, take up time now, maybe just write a little better
okay.
Description of it.
Thank you.
Okay, in further discussion of item 3, we can go ahead and proceed to item 3A, which is recommendation to the Board of Land and Natural Resources for approval of authorization of funding for the Nature Conservancy during fiscal years 21 to 26. We have a motion to approve.
Maybe you should ask for testimony.
What's that?
Maybe you should ask for testimony.
Oh, testimony? Yeah. Can you further?
Okay.
Do we have a motion to recommend?
Is that testimony for or against, or is that?
It's testimony in general.
Like public testimony. Yeah.
Are we in public or are we?
Well, I think that we can kind of talk on the side about the proposal because we should probably have that discussion. I'm just trying to like move us along, to be honest, because we have a ton of things to go and do this meeting. So, If it could be brief.
I would just testify on behalf of Maui that, you know, I hear a lot of these great things coming out of NAPS and things like that, but I would just testify to, or, you know, ask the question, is what is the total budget for TNC's forest program, and what portion of this NAP money is, you know, what is the portion, what is the NAP money portion, like what percentage of, is that of your total budget?
Is that,
I mean,
for me?
As a for a testimony, I mean, the TNC is receiving more money than our Natural Area Reserve Program and Forest Reserve Program on the island of Maui. So it's kind of a hard sell for people on the ground, but it's not a hard sell when you're looking at the area, right? But when you look at it in the bigger context of what the state does with their money, I think it's a mixed bag. It's something worth looking at.
Just to clarify, I don't believe that's actually true. So I'll go over the numbers with you, and we can, yeah.
Any further comments or testimony? Okay. Moving. Do we have a recommendation? Do we have a motion to recommend this to the Board of Land and Natural Resources?
Yeah, I move.
Okay. We have a motion. And a second. Is there any further discussion of this point? Okay.
I'm just wondering if you have to keep in the note in the record that Allison is abstaining from voting.
Yes, we'll do approvals. Approvals, the declaration, just so that it's for the record. All in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed, and abstentions.
Hi.
One abstention.
Abstain.
Okay, one abstention.
Thank you.
Okay, so moved. Next, item 4, recommendation to the Board of Land and Natural Resources for approval of a civil resource violation fee schedule.
Maybe we have folks here from Maui that might be most interested in the item 5B, so maybe we can skip to that agenda item and then go back to the other one.
Okay. We'll go ahead and move forward then to item 5B, which is Ahikikinau Natural Area Reserve Extension. Receive recommendations from Division of Forestry and Wildlife, if any.
Do you have any presentation you wanted to provide?
Leia did, but I have a...
Maybe Leia...
Yeah, I could run it down if...
Yeah, okay. Maybe she doesn't know that we just skipped to this.
I mean, I can start until she comes back, so if you guys want to...
Maybe if you could try to look for Leia.
Take a look. We're looking at this parcel right here. Mm-hmm. Sorry, this is the parcel. In the middle, this is the parcel.
One of you goes.
Gotcha. This is the parcel. I guess I didn't bring enough to go on. Maybe you guys share. You guys friends? Yeah, that's the parcel.
This one right here.
Yeah, jumped up one right in the middle, the nice square right by the bit. Yeah.
So, this kind of just popped on the radar recently. But it's kind of a nice parcel to grab for a lot of different reasons. But the main reason for me is being able to curb development adjacent to our natural area reserve, and then being able to better manage the natural area reserve and the state parcels in the area that we're already managing. So basically, everybody to the northeast or northwest of that parcel is all private land until you get back to our natural area reserve. But then the two parcels to the east of that are state land unencumbered that we hope to bring into forestry and wildlife. The parking area that you see as it is now, we manage that by providing porta potties and a dumpster, informational signage. We have outreach staff that visit that area once a day to give various types of information.
but it in itself is kind of a zoo. I mean, it's right on top of the ocean, right adjacent to some of the best coral reef in the state. It's got runoff coming from the mountain side right down the road that accesses the parking lot, and that flushes into the ocean. And then you've got the wave action actually eating away at the beach. So where people are parking now is a really bad spot, and there's a lot of pollution and sedimentation attributed to it. So the parcel in question has water, a water meter. So we're hoping to use the resources on that parcel to continue a vegetative strip along the coastline. And then in combination with the state land up just directly behind the parcel and then next door to it, reconfigure the parking so that we can get it away from the beach. And then, like I said, filter it with the vegetative strip, create a little bit of coastal resilience with some native vegetation. But the ask is kind of significant. It's $1.5 million that we're seeking funding for. Most recently, we went to the Legacy Land Commission, and we had a site visit out there earlier this week. We have a presentation, I believe, next week. We're really hoping to, receive their funding. If it's not enough, we're going to have to look at other places, but we're hoping to get the recommendation of the NARS Commission to continue forward in this endeavor to secure the parcel and add it to the NAR. That parcel would be directly added to the Natural Area Reserve.
That funny-shaped one just to the northwest is not available, I take it?
The one that looks kind of like a little boot?
Backwards, fancy number one.
Yeah. No, that is part of the overall Lachlan Holdings that has all these parcels, and they're just wealthy people from Nevada. They come every couple months, maybe for a week at a time. They don't really spend a lot of time. They have a caretaker on site, but yeah, that's their grand estate. The other really interesting thing about the parcel is if you look at their mega reality, you can see the lines come directly across that cove. So they own that water as a fish pond. It was a historic fish pond deeded with the property. The one caveat to that is the parcel in question that we want to buy comes with an easement to that. So that would help us out a lot with management. Currently, I'd have to get in the car, drive out the road, hack about a half an hour to get out to the coastline. With some sort of an easement there, we can get to the Natural Area Reserve a lot faster. There's benefits to that, both public safety and resource management, things like that. There's also the whole situation with the Ahika now being perpetually closed every 2 years with these temporary closures, right? Like, we're trying to get away from that system, and one of the ways to do that is to come up with some sort of limited access scenario. So having that parcel, this easement, that might spell out something better than what we have now, which is a road with no parking, and that's where all the access trails originate from, history, basically. So in an effort to hopefully better manage the area, be in line with our management plan, which wants to limit us to try to influence and limit developments around us. That's what our hopes are with the parcel. So again, we're just looking for the recommendation from the NARS Commission that we continue that effort.
Was there further materials to share? Or?
No.
Okay.
There were cross wires on who was doing what, I guess. So.
If you guys have more questions, we definitely have more information that we can share with you folks, but we don't have any more.
Yeah. And it was kind of an advantageous, opportunistic kind of deal, right? Originally, it didn't have any water, and Lachlan Holdings developed the water to the site in hopes to buy it because the owners originally didn't want to sell it for a low price, right? It had no water, it had no access. They brought water to it, now the price is in the million numbers, right? So it's, they're ready to sell. Lachlan pulled out of buying it, and then the owners said that they would sell it to us for 20% under market value. So kind of a...
Another thing, I don't know if Peter brought it up because I was out trying to get a hold of Leah, is that here's the parcel. If it does come into the NARS system, other than being a buffer this way for lands that we currently have and manage,
representative, you can have a copy.
Sorry.
Maybe someone can give her. Yeah.
Yeah, I have it on my computer.
All right, if I may, sorry about this.
That's okay.
Sort of impromptu presentation, but other than the management implications it'll have for the NAR this way, this entire stretch of land was considered earlier by the National Park Service to be a national park, a national coastal area. They did all the archaeology, all the biological assessment, and backed out of it a few years ago, saying that it's really a great thing, but it's not adjacent to any of the parklands, and we won't do it, but we really urge the state to put it under protection. So there are plans with development of a Dauphin management area, including hunting, on 5,000 acres above us to fence and have NEPM manage the area along here, because there's another set of ankylosing pools at another location further down. And then this would just allow sort of a complete conservation management objective all the way along the coastline, incorporating and protecting also the Ho'opili Trail.
The water that's being supplied to the parcel, is it potable?
It's county water.
Oh, it's county water.
Yes.
So it's from a pipeline, from a source that's farther away than drilling a well by up gradient from this parcel, because it would be very brackish.
Yeah, it's actually a Driscoll line that comes out of McKenna and Kihei.
Okay.
The last meter is about 3 miles from that site.
Okay.
So maybe to clarify, because in some ways this is an acquisition that's a little different than what has been done for most NARs, just because it's largely in support of vegetation management and infrastructure. Are there any resources on the parcel?
There's a small vegetated strip of mostly needle and coal.
Okay.
Other than that, it's 0.46 acres, so it's a really, really
small. Yeah, it's very small. I'm thinking archaeological resources.
There's none on the site, but then it's within the greater Keone Oio archaeological complex. But you can see there's the site just mouth of it that's actually on the Lachlan stuff, and then you see all the other stuff in the background as well.
Okay.
Yeah. I just have a general question. So when these types of parcels come up, you know, it's $1.5 million, is there other requests around the state to have NARS designation for certain parcels of land that might actually have a lot more conservation value than that aren't getting recommended for some reason by... So this one I see has been recommended by DOFOT to be approved, right? Is there a number of requests like this that generally don't, and this one's sort of bubbled to the surface as one that's been approved, or is it a rare thing?
That's mostly mediated by the Legacy Land Conservation Commission. So it's the commission that actually goes through our legacy funding and just determines the prioritization of acquisitions, knowing that some of those acquisitions might be going to Division of Forest and Wildlife, some might be managed by a private entity, a nonprofit. And so I think that's usually the venue where we go through the decision of where we buy places. As far as conservation lands and us determining that, I think that it is actually pretty rare to have willing landowners that want to sell. And so when we do have those opportunities, we're trying to just basically wait until someone's able to sell us our land and then take advantage of that. And the next one that we're going to talk about up in Hana is going to be a similar situation, opportunistic, and something that we hope to take advantage of.
So when these, say, you make the recommendation for this, does that, when DOFA gives its support to it, mm-hmm. is there going to be money from the legislature for this, or is this going to, is it a guaranteed thing, or is it going to be based on, you know, the legislature
You know, the legislature has provided funding overall for the legacy land acquisition program. And so that's actually how this could get funded, and this we have an application in right now. And so that... That's the pot of money available. So the program doesn't specify which parcels actually get acquired, but it's something that the commission actually has a huge role in.
Right, so we're basically providing added endorsement of the Legacy Lands Commission buying this, and if they do, it will become part of the NAR.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's the same mechanism by which we're also going to be evaluating the SANA property?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Except it would become a new NAR, right, as opposed to being added to an existing nearby NAR or adjacent NAR.
And I don't know if I mentioned on a slower track that the unencumbered parcels are going to be transferred and hopefully be made to a NAR as well. They're just, we have to do a lot of community outreach for that, and so that's what's slowing that down, as opposed to this opportunity to purchase. But the public lands surrounding that in Keone Oio are state unencumbered lands that we manage, like I stated before, but we are hoping to transfer those as well. We've already got, you know, handshakes and head nods from Lands Division and all these kinds of things. It's now on us to do the proper outreach and move that along as well. So this is kind of like a prelude to that as well. We're hoping to take all of those lands into the natural area reserve.
That's the part to the southeast. Both of those strips to the southeast.
Those longer ones. They kind of extend down the bay to the next landowner, which is Ulapalakula.
Okay.
Yeah. So that whole area is really rich in archaeology. Not so rich in dryland forest because it's a recent lava flow, but. The resources are still there. It's habitat for monk seal. We had a monk seal born in the bay last year. That after the mother had weaned it off, the seal pretty much lived in this general area for another 6 to 8 weeks before it took off. And then we get seals that come and visit the area. Like I said before, this is one of the last good reefs along with what's in Ahihi, and it's all this stuff here in front of it. So us being able to take this and then these two and get the parking lot out of the way and do some mitigation of runoff and stuff like that is really beneficial to the greater NAR as well, because the current flows towards the natural area reserve as well. So that's another thing. So whatever happens upslope and to the east of our natural area reserve is directly affecting the water quality and the habitat in the reserve.
Is there any precedent for this kind of acquisition that is more in support of infrastructure than, say, having resources on its own? I mean, have there been acquisitions of this sort before?
Yeah.
Roads, for example?
Yeah, totally.
Access?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think, too, just in general, to take islands of private land out of the middle of public land. We've done some land swaps, I know, to that effect with, you know, where the ranch home piece is in the middle of our property.
What's the timeline for the decision-making process for the legacy land?
We should know by early September, because the meeting's in 2 weeks.
Yeah, and if we don't, like I said, if we don't get that, then we're, you know, with your recommendation, we continue to seek other sources of funding, but... the recommendation is really that we continue to pursue this and add it to the NAR.
Any questions from commission members?
Contaminants to consider for new development?
Yeah. Okay. Do we have any testimony or questions from members of the public?
I just want to clarify, please, thank you. This is where the McKenna Road ends at what we call La Perouse down there, right?
Yeah.
And this is the rudimentary place where people are parking.
Yeah.
And the trail begins at the Elon Trail.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, and just for
perspective, any time of the day in the peak hours, you can get almost 70 cars in there. It's more heavily used than our natural areas, or we found out after doing a lot of like car counts and studies related to charging parking fees. We found out that actually more cars go to Keanu Io than do our NAR at Conahena. That was a surprise. Almost by a third more.
And just clarifying, this is recommending essentially continuing the vision recommendation, and this will also go to the land board, is that correct?
Mm-hmm. If we acquire it, we'll say that both we got the money and we have the NARS designation.
Okay. Do we have a recommendation? Do we have a motion to recommend? Okay, motion to recommend.
Second.
And a second. Any further comment or discussion? Okay. All in favor of recommending?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Any abstentions? None. So carried. Maybe it might make sense to just finish with item 5A and complete just item 5 generally. And that is a proposed new natural area reserve at Nanlalele.
Craft vibes. Why don't you start talking for now? I'll bring up some pictures.
Okay, Nanualele is, if you're familiar with Hana and Hana Bay, to the west is the large pu'u, and then the opposite side of the bay is a small peninsula that reaches out into the bay. And that area it was owned by Hana Ranch, or is owned by Hana Ranch. I was approached quite some months ago, saying that they had, I guess, started the procedure to nominate it into the NARS system by themselves when they talked to either Leah or Emma. And she said, well, actually, there's actually a formal way of doing this and to hold off. So it's a 10-acre parcel that is shown here, outlined in the turquoise. This is all water in the white.
Yeah, and the purple parts as well are unencumbered state lands that we're considering additionally adding. Mm-hmm. So right now, that's the donation parcel that Fern was talking about that we'd like to transfer into state holding, and the rest of these coastal parcels are unencumbered state lands that we would like to include in the NARS designation.
So,
you want to show the map? You're going to show some pictures.
Yeah, I wanted to say a little bit. You see there's private lands. There are four hex map keys. Actually, three of them have people on them. They've sort of been the guardians of this area. They were very interested that it come to the state because they thought we would have ways of managing it into perpetuity and preventing any development on the site. They were very interested in it staying in open land. That may have some ramifications farther down with what they perceive use to be and what we would have to do. So that would come out of the management plan creation for this, should we get it. It's being offered to us at literally no cost, so it's doing the due diligence that we would have to, the state would have to pay for instead of acquisition of, instead of funds for acquisition.
Does it have a clear title with Hana Ranch?
Yes.
Okay.
It does.
Because I know there's always been, we had friends that bought some property in Hana, and they ended up having to go to court to figure out who the hell owned it.
No, there isn't access to it. So
okay.
Hana Ranch had, would have had difficulties giving it to anybody else because there was no access to it. The access that the state could use all along is the other unencumbered lands that you saw. It's one single tax map key that wraps around the peninsula and would be directly adjacent to the parcel we're talking about. It's getting to the nature a little bit of it. There are 5 ankylene pools on it, on the site. There are windward ankylene pools, which I think is pretty unique in the state. And we have 2 of them with the only known populations of an endangered damselfly. Megalagon and Xanthamalus. And they're actively breeding, and there are quite a number of individuals that are always visible at these ponds. There's been a lot of encroachment by non-native vegetation, dropping a lot of things like the false almond, dropping leaf matter into that. And all of that could be removed. We hope that it would certainly get the Opi ula back into the ponds. The ponds have been studied by Department of Aquatic Resources, or Division of Aquatic Resources, for about 16 years. And so they've monitored what was in it and what's in it now that the pools are more degraded. But they were very happy, too, to hear that it might come in to the system where we can actually manage the wildlife that's there. It was certainly, it is still with existing hollow forest on it, albeit very overtaken by non-native elements, but it would be something that could easily be restored to the wet ohia and hollow forest, which is, I think, pretty, would be novel for the NARS system too. Other than that, there's not too many biological resources right now. There certainly could be Escamum byroni, which is a grass that grows just a little bit away from here. Meriscus or Cypress pinnatiformis, or a variety pinnatiformis, has a very close population nearby. It's something that was probably there to begin with and is no longer there. So there are other opportunities.
Potential yellow-faced bee habitat.
Hmm? Oh, yes. I believe that I've seen yellow-faced bees, but that was, I was unable to capture it, and we've had the native invertebrate program, Keahi Bustamente, go there. He hasn't found them yet, but it's the perfect area to put in the food plants for that, that would support the bees, and something that's certainly also there. Could also be fenced off and managed for seabirds, potentially, just as habitat disappears elsewhere, although it's very low elevation. So that is some concern. I don't know if there's any... Maybe I can do better if I hear questions. It's very hot. And we have community support. The nearby landowners were very supportive of the fact that we would be picking it up. So here you see the different ponds. They've all been GPSed, and we started studying them. And I think we have access to do that sort of study almost regardless of what happens, unless it goes into I don't think anybody private can pick it up because they have no access into it. So.
Do we have many ankylene ponds in the noise system?
We have quite a few, yeah.
A lot.
Not enough.
Not a lot in the world.
Yeah.
There's not a lot in the world. Yeah,
I know with Emma, there's never enough.
Yeah.
They're mostly the leeward type.
Right, they're leeward. What's really unique is that these are windward ankylene pools.
Do you envision there being public access at some point, or is it going to mostly be...
Well, I think if it's a NAR, NARs are generally open to the public, so we would have to have a management plan in place to address how that would be. It's pretty remote from any of our other natural area reserves, and so it would have to be controlled. especially because you could have harm to the pools unless you had some regimented way of monitoring what was actually taking place. But I think that the public would be invited to do volunteer things like volunteering with invasive removal, with reforesting with native species appropriate to it. And hearing that, they already want to start. have to go through this. The good thing is that it would be an addition that really doesn't cost the state anything. It does have a biological area that would be very important for the NARS system and unique.
So is the proposal just the TMK outlined in blue, or is it also including the unencumbered
It would be including the unencumbered lands.
All the way to include this
right,
over here?
Just under 10 acres of the parcel being transferred from Haleakala Ranch. Hana Ranch.
You'd almost have to have the unencumbered land if we were going to control access or mm-hmm. promote either way, right?
Right.
Because mm-hmm. that wouldn't be your only access.
So I know we covered this, but we list a number of things, but it notes on the bottom that just refers to Hunter Ranch and a parcel. The TMKs comprise the parcel that will be donated,
The part that was highlighted in blue is the parcel that would be donated. It's just under 10 acres. And the wraparound purple color is already state land. It's state unencumbered land. And that would be transferred into forestry and wildlife and NARS use for addition to the 10 acres.
That being the case, I would imagine this is a used shoreline access by the community?
It is totally under control of the people who are here.
The strip, the unencumbered strip.
Yes.
So that is presently used?
No, there's not that much use of it. They prefer, I don't know if we have a picture of it, mm-hmm. but it's the side towards the ocean, the open ocean, mm-hmm. that has beach on it. That's mm-hmm. the area that is has most public use right now. And that's all really under the auspices of the people who live there. Whether you're allowed in there or not, otherwise you get on a stink eye. You know,
right. Yeah, I'm just wondering if there may be community concerns that would need to be addressed if an area of current public access and shoreline use.
We did go and have a public meeting with Ke'alali'i, which is a non-profit organization that is very concerned about maintaining open space and purchasing or getting Hana Ranch parcels. Mm-hmm. They were offered this first by Hana Ranch, but they didn't want to touch it really because they didn't have any mechanism for managing the resources on it. And so it was Ke'alali'i that also began to talk to us once they heard that it was being considered to give it to the NARS.
Going through legacy land somehow too? Mm-hmm. Even though there's no purchase?
We need funding for the due diligence to like the appraisal and that sort of thing.
Which is, do you have any idea how much that is? Is that a lot or a little?
It's, I think, in the tens of thousands of dollars.
Is there comment from the Maui NARS folks about whether this is going to be feasible to manage?
I think it's definitely in our wheelhouse. I mean, we already have invertebrate biologists on staff. We have PEP in-house now. We have a field crew of 5 individuals and a specialist leading them. I mean, we have the team and the resources to manage the area. It's just that it's, like Fern said, it's a little bit further than where we normally would go, right? Like, we go to Hana V and out to Kahiki Nui, but we don't go plumb to Hana, so
right.
It's a little bit further of a drive, but we have the resources to do it.
Okay, that's kind of what I was asking.
Yeah.
It's not going to be a big problem to add that to a regular schedule of monitoring and managing and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, like Fern said, we've already got our biologists and our GIS guy has been out there a couple times and to work on that. So I think we're already moving in that direction. Like he said, even if we were to take it into the NAR, we would probably still, they would still want us to do some management out there, given the unique resources.
Right, and I think that the Maui Nui seabird would pretty much take a look at what could be done seabird-wise at that site, and PEP for the plant species that should come in there that could benefit from that area for recovery of the rare PEP species. And as was said, the insects are already garnering a lot of interest right now.
Sorry, what's PEP?
PEP, Plant Extinction Prevention Program.
It's plants that have fewer than 200 individuals remaining in the wild. So the most endangered of the endangered.
And there are...
They up the number. I thought it was 50.
50.
Okay, 50. 50. Sorry. Even more endangered. There's 200-something species in that category. Right. That's where...
Emma's getting a little more permissive in this. She gets older. Yeah.
We have 113 PEP species on Maui, and the ones that could be recovered here, there's a Mucuna species that is very rare, Mucuna sloniae variety parisica, I can't say the whole thing. It's found really close to here, so it could easily be brought back to the area. And then there's the Cyprus and Ischemum byroni, which really isn't a PEP species, but it is an endangered grass species that's found out there.
Mr. Chairman, since our management has indicated they're not going to be coming in for more money following acquisition, I would move that we approve the due diligence funding.
Okay, so we're then the overall motion then is to recommend the approving due diligence and having it incorporated into a new natural area reserve. So it's two things.
Well, this...
if you find that we have the funding and all that, you complete the due diligence, mm-hmm. it's available.
Mm-hmm.
Do we know how much it's going to cost?
That's
why you're doing all the due diligence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we're asking the Legacy Land Commission for that funding for the acquisition and due diligence. And part of that recommendation will be whether you folks think it's worthy as a natural area reserve. You can add in a recommendation that Legacy supports this.
Well, then I would adjust my motion to reflect what my brain's doing.
Okay. So, and to clarify, so Legacy has seen this, and
they're going to see it in 2 weeks.
They're going to see it. Okay. So they haven't seen this yet. Okay.
Yeah.
They haven't figured out.
But they won't be able to act until you get
the road out there, or if they're going to fly in.
Okay. Okay.
They still will need to always all your information before
I just
you go.
The nature of the motion.
Just in the proposal in the appendix, it looks like, I don't know, it has Christmas berry and African tulip as native. It looks like there needs to be some revisions.
Native? No.
Native
all,
somewhere.
Native, all this stuff, lantana,
go.
And it's all...
Naturalized.
Oh, wait. That's what I was thinking that meant, too. So I don't know if there's...
Naturalized.
Okay, we'll clear up the typos.
That is, of course, incorrect.
Right.
Naturalized is what it means.
Okay, so just the key.
Are.
The key needs to be changed.
Well, this is what. Yeah, this is what. I think PEP goes to this thing. So it is. Yeah, Hank and I went out there. Naturalized.
Okay, so
things
all the nat
are,
is naturalized.
That are naturalized.
Except
that are
for the monk seal and the. Amplify.
Oh, yeah.
They
not
too.
I do?
I think, no, you know what that is?
Yeah.
Fern sent it to me and I assumed it was native and I was, that's my fault. And
oh,
then I
okay.
added things to the list and I continued on with
that.
Oh,
I was going to say.
Okay. It wasn't Fern.
No.
It was, you're off the hook for it.
Maybe we can actually specify invasive too versus Naturalized? I don't know if that's a designation you guys use.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we do.
Okay,
yeah,
that would be nice.
Whichever most accurately reflects current thought.
Awesome.
What do you mean by naturalized?
That they're reproducing on site, non-native species, naturalized into the state of Hawaii.
How is that different from invasive or introduced?
Well, certain species aren't listed as habitat modifying or. Yeah, you have a good question, but the way invasive is used by botanists, by and other managers, that really differs. Like, they make a big distinction between invasive species that are not habitat modifying, but they are naturalized within the state, meaning they are currently growing, reproducing just fine, even though they do not originate from Hawaii.
It might be easier just to put non-native here.
Well, yeah, I've wondered how the thing was. If it was collapsed, I don't remember what the initial.
Because I would say Christmas berry and Scheflera are definitely invasive.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, that's almost a second category.
Then you have to go through each. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a broader category.
So
when this,
if it does come to the NARS, they will not be long lived there.
Call them doomed.
So when this all gets sent to the land board to adopt as a NARS, can we talk about the rocks there? I have a geologic map that I downloaded showing it's one of the youngest Hana flows in the area.
It is one of the youngest.
And I think that ought to be, I think that's important to mention that it is a young.
That's a really good point, because I brought this up before too. I guess we didn't put it in wording. That it's the same as the flows from chemically, the same flow as in Ahihikinau. It's just the portion that
went
down.
That's on the other side of the island.
Went down to the other side.
Yeah.
Cool.
And do we know anything about the cultural uses of the place, or
the people who have been there in these three sites have been there forever, and Hana is very into this area as we go along the shore, especially the north part of it, for fishing and that. It's very rough and very treacherous water there most of the time.
Now it makes sense why that lava is just as rough as the other side.
It's yeah.
young.
Okay, so is the motion, are we going
to... Yeah, so maybe just to clarify what the motion is, I'm also just looking at the item as stated. It would be a motion to approve the proposal for the Nanualele Natural Area Reserve to be formed from these parcels, subject to the acquisition of the parcel that's highlighted.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what it said.
Yeah. Okay. So, is everybody clear on the motion? Any
you second.
I'll second it.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion or?
Yeah, I have one thing to add that I was told I needed to add by Piahi Bustamente, who is from the area. He grew up out there, he's Hawaiian, and he said, I should tell everybody that Nanua is like cloud formations where you see banks of clouds in strips. Mm-hmm. The same is true for a type of wave where you have wave after wave after wave coming in, not like a set. That's Nanua, and Lele means smashing.
Yeah.
So it's a very appropriate point for that, Nanua Lele.
Active jumping. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any further questions or discussion?
Nope.
Okay. So.
Testimony? Maybe we didn't do testimony. Public testimony.
Do we have further testimony from the public or comments? Okay. Motion is on the table. All in favor? Say aye.
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 Aye. All opposed? Any abstentions? No abstentions. So carried.